session number 7304, reel 6.
Colonel King, reel 6. Colonel, I think you were saying that it was really impossible to fire accurately when you were on the move. You had to stop to shoot.
Yes, for two reasons. The first was that there was a certain amount of cover. A man with a 303 rifle, which was the basic weapon of the infantry there, except for section commanders with Stens and the odd, and the LMGs, the one LMGs each section had. It is very difficult to fire a good shot with a 303 rifle on the move from the shoulder. To try and fire from the hip, it was quite useless. Secondly, it's all right to scatter fire all over the place if you can see where the enemy exactly is in a trench. You've got an open bit of ground. Yeah, it's excellent for him, maybe excellent to keep his head down. We had cover. We used to come up. We came upon these positions there quite suddenly. The Italians had got their defence rather well. You came on these positions suddenly. You didn't know they were there. If we came right on them without seeing them within 20 yards, the man would have gone in with his bayonet. And to have in cover individual soldiers, to a certain extent, maybe impossible to control by section commanders, blazing away, more dangerous to our own troops than it would have been to the enemy. So in actual fact, there was no firing to keep people's head down. Any fire that came was when a section was held up of a platoon, it went to ground, and the platoon commander moved another section through, and the section that went to ground gave supporting fire to the section moving forward.
So when a section was fired on, it would immediately stop and give covering fire for a flank attack upon the position that was opposing it?
If it A, knew where the enemy position was, and B, it couldn't itself continue the advance.
Now, you mentioned the going in with the bayonets. Did your men attack with their bayonets fixed?
No. Yes, they attacked with bayonets fixed, but they didn't use it. I mean, they didn't have to. Not one soldier of ours bayoneted another Italian soldier. No, it wasn't necessary.
I believe you mentioned the Italians did abandon some of their advance positions as your advance went forward. What happened to them? Did they...
They moved back towards the fort.
They ran back
towards
the fort?
Yes, moved back towards the fort. They had some positions in depth and they moved back to them. This is what we assume, because there were the forward positions. When we examined the ground afterwards, there were the forward positions. There were no that obviously were used to have a crack at us. Then there were some positions behind, and then finally in the fort. And most of the white flags came out of the fort.
You mentioned the Italians had about 18 to 20 casualties. Mm. How many of them had been in these positions outside the fort?
I would say about 10.
So about half inside the fort from the anti-tank, and the other half presumably from your own men skirmishing through.
That's right.
How about your own casualties?
We didn't have any during the actual attack, none. We had one later, we had one or two later on.
So the Italian fire was entirely ineffective?
Entirely.
Have you any idea why that was?
I think largely because at one they couldn't see us.
Because of the cover?
That's right. They were firing on sort of what might term fixed lines, if you like, into the thorn trees and the scrub. They couldn't actually see where we were initially. And by the time we got close to the fort, the anti-tank and the carriers had opened up, and the fire was going more towards where the anti-tank was and the machine and the carriers were than it was towards us, although we were under fire, but not to the same extent. And then, once the anti-tank had a crack at and hit the lighthouse and hit the fort a couple of times, it wasn't long after that when the whole thing was over and the white flag started coming out.
How long did the whole attack take, roughly speaking?
Well, we think maximum of an hour and a half.
So it was a fairly brisk action. Could you tell me a bit more about the Italian positions in front of the fort, their general character and structure?
Like a lot of the Italian positions we met later on, or at least I didn't meet so much, but other companies met, and also in the desert, they were very, very well prepared. Extremely well prepared. And you, in a lot of cases, you couldn't see them until you were very close to them. They got rid of the spoil. They were, well, they so sighted that they had a line of fire, but yet there were enough cover around them not to be able to see them. And they sped the spoil.
Were they riveted?
Ah, now. That I honestly can't answer now. But put it this way, they were in good condition and the sides hadn't fallen in. And whether that was because the ground was sufficiently firm or whether it was because they riveted, I can't honestly remember.
What sort of depth were they?
I think about 4'6".
And were they one-man rifle pits, or were they for two men or three men?
They were for three men. There may have been the odd one-man on a flank to watch a flank or something like that. But in the main, I don't think that any of them were less than three men.
So they were in section clusters, were they?
I would say so, yeah. Oh, yes. Except for the... they had some... the odd heavy machine gun, which is rather similar to our old Vickers. I was just trying to visualise where they were. I don't think they were in the forward... They were not in the sort of what I call the forward positions at all. I think they... The ones we saw were run by the fort itself.
Presumably they would have been...
covering the open ground, mainly, I think.
Further back.
They were not entirely covering the open ground, because I'm pretty sure those are the ones that fired at us first. And fortunately, by the grace of God, as I say, went straight over our heads.
And you were able to edge your left hand...
That's right.
...back into cover. Mm. Presumably the Italians had to run in the open when they abandoned forward positions for the more rearward ones. They didn't have communication trenches, did they, or anything like that?
No, not that I know of. There were some huts, you see, round the actual fort. Down towards the jetty. round the fort itself. I can't remember what they were used for. I think they were probably for accommodation and for storage. Because I think the fort was probably... It was a communication centre, there's no doubt about that.
There was radio in it.
There was indeed. And we were actually... the chap was in contact with his headquarters, where whilst the attack was going on, he stuck to his guns and was radioing away. And right up to the time we entered the fort, that operator was on, and it was a fairly healthy size radio station. Because when we got into the fort and we grabbed the senior Italian officer there and asked him some questions, it was perfectly obvious that he had said that He was being attacked in force, and he'd had to surrender. And that was that. Because it wasn't short, it wasn't very long after all this happened that along came an old bomber. An old three-engine Caponi, I think it was. We used to call it the breadbasket, the old breadbasket. He and bombed us.
This was on the same day.
On the same day.
And it was just one aircraft.
Just one aircraft. Just one aircraft, as far as I remember. Yes, it was one aircraft. Dropped a mixture of stuff. Dropped some lethal little things, butterfly bombs, which the soldiers called Red Devils. They were on the ground. And when they came out of the aircraft, or whatever it was, the container they were in, they came down with sort of wings on them. And they, as soon as they hit the ground, they were fused. And if you kicked one of those, you'd blow your foot off.
So it's really an airborne booby trap.
In a sort of way. And some of them went off on impact. Whether they were in, I don't know, whether they were supposed to go off on impact, I never found out. But a hell of a lot were lying around, and this is where we had our first casualty. Soldier who didn't know where he was, he kicked it. The right red thing, he sort of kicked it. Blew his foot off. That was the first casualty. Second one, I think, was also from bombing. I can't remember what happened. I think that was an ordinary bomb. He got a bit of shrapnel in him.
What happened to your casualties? How were they dealt with?
Well, it was not long. I think it was about the day after we went to Mers Attack Live. The battalion actually assaulted, was it Corora or Elgena? I can't remember now. One of those places. And took it. And so we had there was a route from Mers Attack Lie to Gaona. I haven't got a decent map, unfortunately.
Did you have a medical officer with you?
Oh, no. We had a medical orderly. I don't think we had a medical officer with us. I don't think so.
So all you could do really was first aid, was it?
Yeah.
What about the Italian casualties? They're wounded. How were they dealt with?
Can't remember. Quickly, I can't remember what happened to them. I can't remember what happened to them at all. Terrible thing to say, but it's true. I have no idea. I suppose we evacuated them to our battalion headquarters eventually. Eventually. And then on to... and then into a prison, some prisoner war camp. I can't remember what happened to them. I can't remember what happened to the prisoners.
What was the
strength? I'm wrong. The prisoners eventually went back by... the prisoners eventually went back by vehicle. No, they didn't. They went back by dhow when the port was opened.
So they went by sea to Port Sudan.
That's right.
What was the size of the Italian garrison? Was it primarily European, or were they mostly?
No, mostly. They were mostly colonial troops.
So they were Eritrean.
Yep.
Were they?
Yes, they were.
Presumably, Eritrean. With an Italian officer.
They were off and NCOs.
And NCOs. Yep. So, what sort of strength were the Italians as such?
I suppose about 150.
150 altogether?
Yes.
Of whom, how many, about 10% or something like that would be actual Italians as opposed to...
Yes, yes, not more. Not more, I would say.
How did they respond to being captured?
Only too pleased. That was our impression. They were only too pleased. I mean, the white flag went up awfully quickly. when the after the assault started, I mean, there was no time at all, really, because we got to move on as fast as we could. And it wasn't very long after the attack started, they applied Frankfurt up.
Did they show any signs of hostility to you?
None at all.
Did any of them speak English?
Yes.
And what did they have to say about the war and the fight?
Well, it was obvious their heart wasn't in it at all. They were very much out on a limb. They felt as if they were very remote out there, a fair little way away from the garrison of Elgena. And quite frankly, they were not a very happy bunch of people. Of course, I think they said to us, oh, we didn't want to get in this war. We're not, you know, it's not our war and all the rest of it. But, I mean, that was the normal Italian view all the, you know, every time we met them, you know, or in North Africa, they would tell you, oh, this is not our war, we didn't want to get into this war at all.
Did they say why they particularly disliked involvement in the war?
I think really the mere fact was the fact that they didn't like the Germans. That's the first start when they came to North Africa. And the Germans virtually at times made them fight because they were behind them to see they didn't run away or give up or anything like that. And I think largely in Eritrea, some of the white units, regiments and battalions of the Italian army fought extraordinarily well, but they were, one or two of them were the pick of the Italian army. The colonial battalions fought quite well until their officer element and NCO element started to collapse, and then the black troops, for want of a better expression, collapsed themselves and gave up, and very quickly.
So once the Cardo were demoralized.
Right.
And from what you've been saying, it sounds as though they were quite skillful, but they weren't really well motivated.
No, then motivation wasn't there.
Did you observe anything of the relationship between the Italian officers and NCOs and their black soldiers?
No. The reason is that, I mean, we couldn't. It was difficult to communicate with the Italians at the best of time, and it was difficult to communicate with the soldiers who didn't speak even Arabic. Most of them, they spoke, I don't know what, Tigri or is one of the languages around that part, but it may have been some other language. And quite frankly, it was impossible to talk to them.
What happened at Merzataklai after the fighting was over?
Well, the idea was, why we wanted Merzataklai was to cut down this terrible line of communication there was from Port Sudan to the forward elements of the 7th Brigade, which my regiment was part. Although Merzataklai can't be called a port, because it only had a wretched little sort of jetty out in sea. Now, the idea was, one knew that using Arab dhows from Port Sudan or Suakin, towed by perhaps launches to speed it up, you could bring in supplies into Merzataklai and thereby cut down a considerable distance, something in the region of about 200 miles of road work that transport had to do to supply. So we were there, I imagine, about 10 days. During that period of time, Dawes came in with stores for the whole brigade, as well as bringing in troops. And the troops that came in, there was a battalion or equivalent of the French Foreign Legion, and there was a battalion of Free French. And I think also, but I'm not awfully sure, that the Chads came in that way.
They were also French.
They were also French troops. Later, we had a lot of contact with them. They were magnificent men, enormous, great, big chaps, tremendously tough. But that's another story. But into Merseytactile came this bunch of people, as well as, I say, rations, nappy supplies, Free French, French Foreign Legion. And there was to be established a base there. The base was looked after, I think, by one of our other companies which came in with the stores. I think it was A Company, initially, until the French and the Free French came in. And I believe that eventually it was handed over. What was left of it, because, unfortunately, I think the French Foreign Legion rather lived, their idea was to live off the land, and they lived off the supplies that had been put on the land from the Dawes, and rather overdid it, and overdid their share of the Naffy stores. We got on extremely well with them, but we had our problems.
Were these French Foreign Legion men, were they primarily French, the soldiers, or were they all
nationalities? Oh, all nationalities. All colours.
What about the Free French? Where were they from?
They're the ones, I think, that were in Syria and Lebanon, and yes, I think that was it mainly. The
so
ones who
from the Vichy
authorities. That's right. Who said we're not going to stay there? We met them tremendously in the western desert afterwards. After Bir Hakeim and places around there. Where I mean, they had a tremendous battle of Free French, and they were very good indeed.
So they were good soldiers.
Oh God, yes. They were good soldiers.
Were they professional soldiers, or were they conscripts, these Free French?
Mixture. I would say, initially, they were conscripts, but they had been in the French army for a fair long time, and then they had taken on a fair number of chaps who were civilian Frenchmen who had been working in the Middle East, one place or another.
Did they have French armaments and equipment? Had they been equipped by us?
Oh, French armament equipment. When I met them in Merseytactile, yes. Whether later on, I think later on they were converted to British because we couldn't supply the ammunition and things for their armaments.
And did they have this French quadratic scheme of organisation?
I have to cast my mind back to what the Chads had, who were really our contacts, actually, in a battle later on. And far as I recall, the Chads had the French formation in their companies and their platoons, yes.
Did the Chads have European officers?
Yes.
And NCOs as well?
I think so.
These would presumably have been professional French.
Yes, indeed. They had wonderful, the Chads were wonderful because they were like a lot of the native troops that one has, especially, I met it later in West Africa. Given a chance, they take all their equipment off, their boots and their lot, and their rifles, and put the whole lot on their head and carry it that way. They find it much easier to carry it that way than put a pack on their back. Oh, much easier. And it was a splendid sight, seeing them come up from the rear when they were not in any contact with the enemy. See these chaps marching along there. Great big men they were, too. With, as I say, all their kit, their personal kit, and their weapons on their heads.
Did that was a non-tactical form of marching.
Oh, non-tactical, very much so.
What sort of accommodation did you have to live in while you were at Merza Tacfire?
We lived in what was the Italian accommodation, the huts and this fort.
Was the Italian accommodation comfortable?
Yes, fairly. As far as I remember, it's pretty bug-ridden. Some nasty sort of fleas and. Fleas particularly, I think, were horrible. Bitten.
What happened to you after your stay at Merza Tacfire finished? Where did you go next?
Oh, this was very trying. We were ordered to rejoin the battalion. A company had come in by sea. The rest of the battalion had taken Carora, and I think they had taken Elgena as well. And there was a track, as far as I recall, from Merza Tacfire to Elgena. And it was a track, that's all. And we were told to join up with the battalion. There was a mistake made, and it was a very bad mistake. By this time, there were two companies with us, and the CO now was really giving orders, rather than Major Phelps giving orders, as to what should happen and who should do what. And he has said that A company, who had been the garrison company at Merza Tacfire, should be the first on the march. I, by this time, had a lot of experience of Merza Tacfire and the temperatures. I mean, it was, the day temperature there was very high indeed. I mean, it's well into the 100, over 100. And so Weber said we ought to march, start at about 3 o'clock in the morning, and do the main part of our marching by day. A company, however, the CO wanted to go first. A, because they hadn't had the same amount of, to my call, experience of the march, and also they felt that let them go first. They're going to be in the van later on, so they can be the company first to move. Well, they left, in actual fact, the time was changed, I don't know why, and they left about 5 o'clock in the morning.
So it was already getting hot by that stage.
I left at, they moved, not tactically, but they moved platoon by platoon. So the company took up a fair distance back. I suppose I moved